Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
They were trying very hard to manage their use in a way that gave them a social media that didn't disturb them, didn't shame them.
I often think those algorithms, they're more of a funnel. It slowly closes in on you. And actually, the idea that you were exploring something you thought had an endpoint just gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And that can be really difficult.
They could lose hours. I mean, 4-6 hours, they described, once they were sucked into TikTok.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. Great to have you with us. Thank you for downloading the podcast. Thank you for streaming the podcast. However you found us, you are more than welcome to episode 284. You can subscribe if you want, or you can just check out all the previous editions. Start at episode 1, work your way through. You'll be here a while, but you'll learn a lot. I'm certain of it. We've got some brilliant conversations to have this week around and ahead of International Women's Day. Now, International Women's Day is, of course, a day to sort of celebrate women who've made incredible advances, women who are doing incredible things, and try and even up some of the imbalances that we have. And there are a lot of them, about women in society. The conversation today will be based around a study conducted by The Female Lead, who are a powerful campaign group who operate globally. Got many millions of followers on social media as well, and are doing some really, really interesting work. Now, their study is looking at the use of social media by teenage girls and young women, and finding out what the consequences of that are. We know from previous studies that a lot of people feel that social media is having a negative impact on their life, that they don't necessarily even enjoy it, and yet it's something that they are doing on a regular basis and doing a lot, spending at times hours and hours and hours looking at social media. So the team wanted to get a sense of what the impact of that was, and also knowing that social media isn't going to go away, it's here to stay. How can teenage girls, women, and people in general use social media more effectively in a way which is positive to them, that has positive outcomes, that increases their aspiration, that makes them feel better about themselves? Now, this is all part of this campaign called Disrupt Your Feed, which is about saying use social media on your terms. It's not there as a window to a world which you can't be part of. It's a tool which you can use to inspire and enhance your own world. I think it's really, really interesting what's been set out. I'll put a link to some of the info around this in the notes to the podcast so you can get your head around it as well. But it just goes to show you yourself can take steps around your social media, who you follow, who you choose to follow, and how you can take the lead in your own social media feed. Full credit to the Female Lead team. Let's have that conversation from an academic point of view now with Dr. Terry Apter, who worked alongside the Female Lead to bring this study to life. And actually, as you'll hear from this first response, Dr. Terry's really passionate about this. It shouldn't make a difference if you're listening to this on the go, but I just wanted to preempt anyone emailing me going, what was that problem about? It's not an issue, don't worry. Dr. Terry set out how she approached the Female Lead and got involved in the project.
Well, my interest in this particular project and my involvement in this particular project began when Edwina Dunn, the CEO of the Female Lead, came to Cambridge and presented a paper in which she was showing really interesting data on the way that teen girls in the UK used social media. So it was disturbing, as often we're disturbed by what we hear about teen girls and social media. And what she showed was that most girls in the UK have a very narrow range of adjectives they use to describe themselves and their interests. And their focus, at least on social media, is very narrow. They're very interested in boy bands, in fashion, in lifestyle, in some kind of music, but it seems very limited. And actually, it's more limited than boy teens' language on social media. They're more aware of a range of things that they might be and they're interested in. But within this, you know, rather gloomy story of how girls were talking about themselves and their interests on social media and who they were following. They were mostly following male influencers. Among, there was a 10% of teen girls had a much broader vocabulary. So they would use things like tech, chair, aspiration, lawyer, CEO, things that indicated a wider range of aspirations. And another difference with this 10% was that they were following several high-achieving women, that those were the profiles that attracted them, more likely to attract them. And, you know, like all of the audience, we were very, very interested in this and thinking about how to take it forward. But you have what all we had at that time was a correlation. We had some girls are indicating a, you know, more robust sense of self and interest in social media, and they're following high achieving women. So were these in any way linked? You didn't know that it could be that that 10% of girls were so different in some ways that these were two differences that may not be related, or perhaps they were connected in some by some third variable. So I approached Edwina, whom I'd already met on a number of occasions, but I was very focused on the project at this point. I'm not sure how polite I was. I said, you know, if you want to take this forward, this very interesting stuff, but it's not enough. And if you want to interest educators and parents and teen girls themselves, let alone legislators, you need something that shows there is a link between these two things. So I propose that we trial an intervention. Let's take just a random sample of girls. I mean, not random across the country. We had to deal with what schools would give us access to these girls, what girls would accept participation in this, would agree to participate in this. But we would get to know them. We would find out what their interests were, how they looked at social media, how they used social media at the time. And then we would say, can you do just one thing? Can you follow four or five profiles of women we send you? And these were tailor-made lists for them, for their interests. We wanted to know, you know, not what we thought they should be interested in, but what they were interested in. And we wanted to make this very simple so they would comply with it. Because if we were to say, now, you mustn't spend more than X amount of hours on social media, or you mustn't follow those feckless boy band heroes, you know, you must do this, you must do that, we wouldn't have got compliance. We wanted it nice and simple. So they signed up for this, and 6 months, 7 months later, we went back and we interviewed them again, and we said, How have you been? What are your interests? How are you using social media now? And we were really amazed at the strength of their responses. They were saying, my view of social media has been transformed. I didn't know you could use it in this way. I started following someone who was an aspiring astronaut, and then other things came up on my feed, like things from NASA, and I now regularly follow the Explore section of NASA. Or they were interested in music, and they were particularly taken by profiles of people who were not stars, but on the cusp of going professional or preparing for a performance or preparing for a competition and the day-to-day grind of that. And it could be music, it could, in some cases, it was a more advanced degree. You know, one girl said, I had no idea what it was like to write a master's thesis, but someone I was following on social media was explaining what she was doing day by day, and it took the mystique out of it. I mean, it was still a big ambition, but I understood how it could be done. Or if someone was political, they would link up with other people. So they had, she said, I now have the confidence to join a march or an activity or a discussion that I wouldn't have before. So that was really quite eye-opening. But this is 2019, and we know that social media changes so much, and each cohort of teen changes also. So we wanted to revisit it. We wanted to, one, find out from our 2019 participants, you know, do you remember it? Did it have any impact on you? What do you think about it looking back today? We wanted that. We also wanted to look at this cohort of teens, who are the 14 to 16-year-olds today, and see whether that intervention would have the same effect. And because there's been so much about the link between social media use and depression or anxiety, I wanted to add something. I wanted to say, well, could you do something? Could we trial a simple intervention that might help girls, teen girls, sustain a better mood while they're looking at social media? And then we wanted a control group, no intervention, to see what you know, whether there was any difference in the control group and the two groups in which we had an intervention. So that's what we've just done. And we, going back to the, as it were, the graduates of the first female lead project, you know, they're now in their early 20s. It was lovely to hear what they said. I mean, they said it had been a very rewarding experience participating in this experiment, that it had made them more aware of how they were feeling on social media. It had definitely changed their way of looking at social media, particularly on those platforms that they had been using at the time of the intervention. And that on the whole, they felt they were using it a little bit less and more carefully, and that, yes, it had made a mark on their aspirations and that it had moved them forward a little bit.
So we can from that derive that if you focus a little bit more on the sort of social media that is sort of can be educational, can have purpose, that can challenge the algorithms that are coming in your direction, and you push back at them, taking the lead, if you like, that, or each of those things gives you a better experience online. But when we talk about mental health there, you mentioned depression and anxiety. Was that, if you have that experience on a phone or on a tablet, that actually in life, depression and anxiety symptoms are lessened? So you can do something on your phone and then your everyday life is improved.
Okay, that would be a great and very big hypothesis, and I cannot claim that we have got a handle on that yet. What we wanted to approach in this more recent project was to address the question whether social media itself is causing the increase in depression and anxiety, whether we could moderate or help girls moderate their use and their responses to social media so that it wasn't spilling over into their other life. And, you know, that itself is a big, big, big thing with, you know, many variables, many ways of testing it, many possible outcomes. And what I would, and I would say we've taken one step in that very, very complex picture by saying what we have found in this second project is that teen girls welcome being questioned or being prompted to think about their moods when they're on social media. It helps them understand what their feelings are and whether something's getting them down. They like having access to a range of emotional terms that will help make sense of their complicated feelings. And we learned from them how complex the relationship between mood and social media is, because what they noticed was that how they were feeling before they went on social media affected how they were viewing social media. So if they were down, you know, at a low point and they looked at Instagram, then they could be pulled down in mood further by glamorous images of anyone, you know, from friends who they knew weren't really glamorous. It didn't matter. Just that glamour picture was enough to think, I'm not what I should be. But if they were feeling up when they went on social media and saw exciting, glossy pictures, they would think, I can be like that too. So I think it's a reminder, I hope it's a reminder that does its work to other researchers, that it's not enough just to correlate social media use and mood. You have to understand how these interact. It's a big, big, big question about social media's link to teen depression and anxiety. And there are many, many people who say, we have proof that it's social media that's causing this. And I'm saying, you know, just this very simple exercise shows you it's not as simple as you think. And you can waste an awful lot of research time, if you don't take that on board.
I wonder whether or not what this study does, it embraces the fact that although some people can see the negatives around social media, I think there's a female lead survey that says something like 3 in 5 women say that maybe the world will be a better place if social media didn't exist. But quite clearly, social media isn't going anywhere. Social media isn't going to disappear. And actually, what this does, it shifts it slightly and says, actually, this study shows that you can use social media better and it can have a positive outcome on your thoughts, your feelings, your aspirations, which is, I think, a bit more progressive and sort of allows everyone to come on board with it. Because, of course, it means you don't have to get rid of Instagram, get rid of your Facebook, get rid of your TikTok, get rid of your Twitter. People like that stuff, don't they?
Well, they do. And certainly the girls that participated in this project knew that social media, even though it had some downsides, was going to be part of their life. And, it might be nice if social media didn't exist, but that's a whole different world, and it does. And it's difficult to imagine this world without it. But what we also discovered, quite distinctive of this cohort, was they were already aware that how they used social media would affect the algorithms and what came up on their feed. I mean, they used the term algorithms. And some of them did decide to delete an app. I think TikTok was the worst, the most dangerous in terms of hoovering up time. You know, just that passive scrolling they could lose hours. I mean, you know, 4-6 hours they described losing once they were sucked into TikTok. But, you know, one of the points you make is we're saying there are things you can do. It is amazing how heavily the research, you know, from the Royal College of Psychiatrists down to anything else asks, what are the harms of social media? You know, what we need to know is what the harms are. And yes, of course, you do need to know that, but why is no one saying, what are the real benefits? And also, how are the girls themselves trying to manage their social media use so that they're getting benefits rather than harms? And we found that this cohort of girls were very thoughtful about that. They were trying very hard to manage their use in a way that gave them a social media that didn't disturb them, didn't shame them, didn't put their reputation at risk, and didn't get them down. But they could only go so far. They were aware that they were up against really big beasts who were out to sort of explore their weaknesses or their foibles, they sometimes called them, and to lure them in so that they were just passive scrollers. They found that a very unhealthy experience. I mean, sometimes difficult to disentangle themselves from it, difficult to step away, but it was a much less positive experience, just passive scrolling, than actively searching for things that interested them.
I often think those algorithms are a little bit like, people imagine they're a tunnel that goes down because you like gardening, that you're going to see more gardening pictures, but I tend to find rather than a tunnel, they're more of a funnel, that it slowly closes in on you. And actually the idea that you were exploring at something you thought had an endpoint just gets narrower and narrower and narrower, and that can be really difficult. But can I ask you this, Dr. Terry, how were you able to identify, or what were the signs of a profile or someone on social media that you as an academic could say, right, this is a positive person, this is an aspirational people? What were those rules that you set that our listeners can set as well for themselves when they see someone online?
Okay, sure. So we had a set database for healthy profiles, and that database is the female leads database of what they call female lead role models. And what they're looking out for is not necessarily stars, but achievers, you know, someone who's achieved something and who presents herself not as a template of I'm to be envied and I'm to be emulated, but this is what I do, this is what I've worked at, this is how I did it. And this is what interests me, rather than this is what you should do. So what we were aiming for was a register of, possible, very, very diverse in all sorts of ways in terms of what they were doing and who they were and where they were from. And this was just to say, here are some possibilities, not here are some icons. That was very important. I mean, the idea of role model is double-edged, because a role model is someone who helps you aspire to what you want to do, but a model is somebody who says, this is how you should be, I'm perfect, and this is, you should aspire to this. So we wanted role model in the first sense of just saying, you know, this is what's possible. Take a bit of what I do, leave a bit of it behind. And I'm not perfect, and I've had rough patches, and, you know, I'm still working at it. So that was the type of thing. And as I say, we had a ready-made database, but that isn't the complete set of profiles that would do in this case.
It does make me wonder, in those circumstances, positive role models, people who are genuinely doing interesting things, who are real, who are authentic, and whose stories, when you hear them, makes you feel positive about yourself, your own aspirations. And yet, the social media trend that we start off with, if you like, is there's another story. There are people who are the airbrushed types, the fake celebs, the reality stars who will say, look at me, I've been given this money to tell you to drink this drink or whatever it would be. It would strike me that as a human being, you would think automatically we would go to the former. We would look for the genuine people. We would look for the aspirational figures. And yet we've fallen into the traps of maybe following the people who offer us a little bit less. And I wonder what that tells us about us as human beings. What are we looking? Are we looking for something that is an easy fix, or something that offers us a short term hit, if you like, but doesn't give us that long term positivity?
Yeah. So it's an interesting question. Why are we attracted to the less healthy than the healthier?
That's a much better way of asking that question. Yeah.
So. And I can't answer that, but I think the big beasts who run those platforms must know the answer to that, or at least they know that there is a tendency to find the easier, the simpler, but the less comfortable, the more enviable. There is an attraction to that. And if they really do want, as they say, to make social media a safe, healthy place for the young people who use it, then I think it would be amazing if they would take note of what the girls themselves are trying to do, what they're aiming for, what they see as less healthy and more healthy, and also of the studies we've done, and they would make use of that rather than sort of sit back and think, we have to do this from top down. The people who are using it, we're just looking at to see how we can manipulate them, rather than can we learn from them in terms of what their goals are and how they themselves are trying to make social media a better environment for them.
In terms of the advice that the female leaders offering out around this, three pieces of advice: to scroll with purpose, to challenge the algorithm, and also to take your lead in your own feed. I wanted to ask you, Dr. Terry, for people who are listening to this now, who then turn to their social media, what are those things who are those people that they should look for? What are those questions that they should ask of that feed, of those people that they're seeing, about whether or not they need to take some of these steps and get some of the benefits that can come from taking these steps?
One, is this getting me down? They can ask themselves that. How is this making me feel? Am I looking for something? And if so, what am I looking for? What do I want out of this? And if it is just passive entertainment, then time yourself, because, we all need to blank out, zone out, but we don't want to do it for 4 hours. We want a little reprieve. So think about what it is you want to do and find out whether there are other people who are doing that and whether you can learn from that. I think one thing to think about when you're following role models is, or following profiles is, am I just starstruck saying they're perfect and I'm not, or are you saying, there's something I can learn from this. There's at least one step I can take as a result of watching this or seeing how they do things. Also making sure there's nothing that really gets them down. They should think, how am I feeling going into opening up my social media? You know, am I okay? And is this something 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, that is pulling me down? Or, you know, am I on top of this and still driving what I'm seeing and feeling okay? Because there is no point whatsoever in following profiles that are making you feel worse about yourself. It really serves no purpose.
How do you feel overall about social media, Dr. Terry? When you've interviewed those people, you've heard the wide-ranging spectrum of opinions that people have about social media. I don't know if you've got social media accounts yourself that you use or that you found useful. What are your thoughts about it from a personal point of view?
I think that it's now impossible to say, what do you think about social media? Because social media isn't one thing. It is very much a matter of how you're using it and how you personally interact with it, and whether you feel you are able to control your feed. And if you're not, then you need another platform or another set of skills, or maybe even the people running the platform will help you design social media use so that it does help you. It would be really nice if we had evidence that those big companies were interested in listening to the people using it and learning from the people who are really trying to make it a healthier environment.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. SHOUT to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.